Oh, there is so much. There really is so much. First of all, the world just floods in so much that just rises exponentially. I realized once I got onto Facebook and Twitter, now it's so much every day. And then there's been so much this year. I was on sabbatical for a few months, got to write a book. Then there were some controversies in the synagogue. There was same-sex marriage. There was a little kerfluffle over a bar mitzvah video from another synagogue that I wrote about somewhat disparagingly. If you were here on Rosh Hashanah, you know about that. There was an article I published in the LA Times about wealth and compassion. There's the whole business with the phones. They call during the sermon. It's timed that way. There's the 40th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War, which is today. Yep. There is the synagogue and everything here. And so I approached the president several weeks ago and I said, look, just this once, I promise sometime in my sermon I'll say something about giving to the synagogue. Cut the appeal, I need the time. He was very gracious. So here it is. I put all these things and other things on a big piece of paper and I thought to myself, how am I going to do this? And then I remembered a wonderful book of writing by a writer named Annie Lamott. And this is how she named her book. She said, 30 years ago, my brother, who was 10 years old at the time, was trying to get a report on birds written that he'd had 3 months to write. It was due the next day. We were out at our family cabin in Bolinas, and he was at the kitchen table, close to tears, surrounded by binder paper and pencils and unopened books on birds, immobilized by the hugeness of the task ahead. Then my father sat down beside him, put his arm around my brother's shoulder, and said to him, bird by bird, buddy. Just take it bird by bird. So I put it all up there, and then I remembered. One thing that happens to me during the course of the year is people tell me jokes that I can use on Yom Kippur. It's really true. They'll come up to me and they'll say, listen, Rabbi, I have a joke for you that you can use on Yom Kippur. So in the minyan, a couple of months ago, someone told me the following joke. Two guys are standing together in the minyan in the morning. One of them says to the other, oh, I got my 50th anniversary coming up. The other one says, whew, big one. He goes, yep. And at every big anniversary, I do something big. He says, really? He says, yep, everyone. He goes, so what'd you do for your 10th? He says, I bought my wife a beautiful diamond necklace. It's very nice, very nice. Says 50th, huh? So what'd you do for your 25th? He said, ah, for my 25th. For my 25th, I took her to Israel. He said, that's beautiful. That's a wonderful gesture. So what are you thinking for your 50th? He says, I'm thinking I'm going to bring her back. Now, I know in some ways that's not such a nice joke. But I thought if I told it, first of all, I'll tell you why I told it, but if I told it, then maybe it could start a controversy and I'd have something for next year. But when I thought of the joke and I looked at everything, I realized all of a sudden I had the key to the universe. And not in the engine of an old parked car, those of you who are Springsteen fans. I had the key to the universe because all these things, all of them were about the same thing. They were all about closeness and distance. Even the joke is a joke about closeness and distance. And that was the great theme. And I'll tell you what I mean. I mean, think of yourself when you fly into a city and you see the lights beneath you and it's beautiful and it sparkles and it's wonderful, and then you get close. and you see the schmutz on the ground and the dents in the cars. And you realize how different the world looks when you're far away and when you're close. It's the same world, but it doesn't look the same. When I wrote this article about the question of wealth and compassion and what wealth does to compassion, it's really about distance. Because one thing that money does is it allows you to create distance. Private planes, airport lounges, gated houses, big cars, box seats. You can be far away from other people. Power does the same thing. It allows you to create this distance. Nobody's allowed to approach the king too close. King gets distance. He's got power. And it is true, not only today, but forever, that being crowded together is a sign of poverty. Think of all the dystopian Mad Max kind of movies. They're always like large, dirty crowds together, and that's how you know they're poor. And then you go to the wealthy neighborhood, and there are large manicured lawns, and no one's there because there's space, there's distance. And that is a normal, natural, powerful human impulse. It's true of all of us. Just imagine how it feels when you're in a very crowded room, and then you walk outside and you go, ah. Like, say, the synagogue. But you walk out, I mean, there is something about distance that makes us feel safe. And all of us, and by all of us, I'm certainly not exempting myself, all of us use our resources at time to create distance. And after all, the wealth and power that's used to create distance is essential for moving the world forward. Without it, we wouldn't have all the initiatives and all the possibilities and all the buildings and all the charities and all of that thing. But Judaism is a tradition that teaches us not to lose closeness. Remember the first question that you get asked when you go to heaven after you die, according to the rabbis? It's usually translated, "Were you honest in business?" But that's not the literal translation. The literal translation is, "Did you give and take in honesty?" In other words, was there a relationship there? Was there some closeness there? Did you stand far back? Were you far off? Did you use the resources that you have in this world to draw in or to walk away? So first I realized that the question of wealth and of money, which is such a powerful question in the lives of every human being, is in part about distance and closeness. And then all these controversies, I realized they were about the same thing. I know this sounds shocking to you, but I really don't like public controversies. I know. But really, I don't. It's not, it depends what it is, but I wasn't like, that wasn't my intention, and it wasn't what I saw. You know, I'm a little bit like, do you know Freud in his book, Wit, and his relation to the unconscious, tells his favorite Jewish joke. And this is, I'm about to tell you Freud's favorite Jewish joke, in case you were wondering. It's about the guys who are at a firing on two Jews in a firing line, and they put blindfolds on them and they're about to shoot, and one of them goes, "Take this blindfold off. I want to see who's going to shoot me. I want to die like a man." And the guy next to him says, "Don't make trouble." That's I'm a little bit like that. But here's what I discovered that I did not expect. Many of the people, I'm not going to say all, many of the people with whom I had different kinds of controversies, I ended up much closer to than I was before. It reminded me of what Barbara Meyerhoff says in her beautiful book on the old age home in Venice, California, called Number Our Days. There's this one querulous, difficult woman who fights with everyone. And Meyerhoff says to her, why are you always in an argument? And she says, We argued to keep warm. And there is something about the friction of warmth. Even a dispute in the community, if it's done in a certain way, if it's done without dismissal, without cruelty, it creates closeness. If it's done with a certain amount of respect, if people are able to listen, there's nothing wrong with it. If you listen, you learn about the other person, something you didn't know before, and you get closer, and that is a kind of love. Do you know the first time that love is mentioned in the Torah, in the whole Bible, the very first time, is in the reading on Rosh Hashanah. It's when Abraham is taking his son Isaac up the mountain to sacrifice him. Kachna et bincha et yechidcha asher ahavta et Yitzchak. Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac. Parental love, by the way, the first love mentioned in the Bible. But what does that tell you? First of all, it tells you that in love, there's an element always of sacrifice. If nobody gives anything up, nobody really loves. But also, what is a sacrifice called in Hebrew? A korban. And what does that mean? It means a coming close. That when you give something up for somebody else, you come close to them. It's a way of creating that closeness. When you give, you come close. And I know that this dialectic between closeness and distance, it's built in all of us. It's even, you can see it in the prayers themselves. I remember standing once at the Minyan at the Jewish Theological Seminary, and my late teacher, Simon Greenberg, came up to me, and everybody there was swaying and mumbling and swaying. And he said to me, "You see, Jews pray alone together. They're close and distant." Tshuva, repentance, means return. Because sin is hurt, tshuva is healing, but really, sin is distance. When you sin against someone else, you create a distance between you. When you sin against God, you create a distance. And tshuva brings you close, and that's the other thing, is that since we're in synagogue on Yom Kippur, the one thing in Judaism that is both unutterably distant and intimately close is God. God is unfathomably far away, but the Jewish tradition insists God is right here. Karov l'chol korav, close to all who call upon God. When you say a blessing, what do you say? Baruch atah, blessed are you. And you know what? You don't say you to anyone that's not here. Every time you say blessed are you, that assumes God's right there, because you're saying you. Let me put it this way. There's a Hasidic story about a king who has a fight with his son, and the son runs away. And he's bitter and angry, and he hides somewhere in the kingdom, and the king sends emissaries out to find his son, and they look and look, they can't find him. Years go by. Finally, a messenger finds the son, and he says to him, "Your father misses you terribly, and he loves you, and he wants you to come home." And the son says, I can't. The place is too full of bitterness and anger and hurt memories for me. I cannot return home. So the emissary sadly goes back to the king. And the king says, "I understand. Return to my son and tell him if he takes even one step towards me, I'll meet him where he is." Now you realize that in every parable about a king, the rabbis are talking about Melech Malchei Hamlachim, the King of Kings, about God. That's what God says. I don't expect you to come all the way. Just a step. Just a little closeness, just a gesture that you want to get closer to me. That's all I ask. Then I can return. We Jews had the same problem 40 years on, after the Yom Kippur War with Israel. So many of us have grown distant because we don't know it. We don't hear its struggles. We don't talk to its people. We don't visit. We're blessed with its presence. But it isn't blessed with ours. Tomorrow afternoon, that's going to be our discussion with Jan Zakowski. We're going to be talking about the situation in Israel. And if you can make it through the whole day of Yom Kippur, that'll be about 3 o'clock till 4:30. But it's the same issue of distance and closeness with God, with each other, with Israel. It struck me as I was preparing this sermon that in modern Hebrew, do you know what you call relatives? You call them krovim. Relatives in English means they're relative to you. So some are far, some are near. They're relatives. In Hebrew, they're called close ones. It's all about closeness. Human beings are just what Schopenhauer said. We are porcupines. He said, porcupines, when it gets cold, they gather together close for warmth, but then they prick each other and they move away. And that's what we're like. We're confused about what it is that we want and what it is that we need. But here's the key, and everyone knows it somewhere inside of them. It is very hard to live without distance. It is impossible to live without closeness. So now let me come to the synagogue. If you're only here on the high holidays, then let me suggest if you ever get a chance, come on a school day. It's an amazing thing to see. You see how children are taught to draw close, to relate to one another, to their tradition, to become part of a community. And a community is a remarkable thing. I saw it, as did some of you, just a few days ago. When you're part of this community, this is what happens. We lost one of our longtime and beloved members, Ben Dwoskin, at 94. Now, let me tell you, when you're 94 years old, you don't have that many peers. You're lucky if you get a minion at your funeral. But Ben and Lila are here on Shabbat, and they've been members of this community for a long time, and that place was filled with hundreds of people. Hundreds. Because Jews know that the secret, is drawing close. Remember what Hillel said, Al tifrosh min hatzibur, you may not separate yourself from the community. That's the cardinal sin, if you will. So, I want to tell you why it is that I want you to do whatever it is you're supposed to do with these things. I'm going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to tell you why. You take off, apparently, the big sticker or whatever comes off, and you put it on the back of your ticket, and then you fold the back of this thing, and you fold down a tab with lots of money on it. But here's why. I actually have only one reason to tell you why to give to the synagogue. I'm not going to talk about the building. I'm not going to talk about the school. I'm not going to talk about any of that. Because people say to me sometimes, why shouldn't I give? I mean, look, in a couple of days, I'm going, as you know, a couple of weeks, rather, with American Jewish World Service to Thailand. And by the way, there are a few spaces left if you want to go. And if you do, it will change your life. We're going to meet people at NGOs and the people they help. And we're going into impoverished communities. And we're going as Jews, and we're going to study Jewish texts about what it is to do this kind of work, and it's an amazing thing, but why shouldn't you just give your money to Thailand? There are Jews in Israel who are in trouble. We all know that. Why should you give to a synagogue? Why shouldn't you just give, only give? I mean, you should do that too. Why shouldn't you only give to Jews in Israel? I want to tell you why. The reason you need to give to the synagogue is so that we can make more Jews like you. Because if you give to places not like this, then in the next generation, there aren't going to be people like you who are moved by Jewish values to give there too. And a study came out last week that said almost universally, Jews that give to Jewish causes give more to secular causes. Because they have Jewish hearts. And so they give to Thailand and to Haiti and to the symphony and to the synagogue. And the reason they give to the synagogue is they want people in the next generation to be like them. You see the children who are sitting here? I want them to be like their parents and grandparents who are sitting here, who built this community and built the Jewish world and still care about what goes on in other places. You want to reproduce yourself? You got to reproduce your values. You want to reproduce your values? You got to reproduce your tradition. And you want to reproduce your tradition? The only place that really does it is a synagogue. Judaism is a constant struggle against the disease of distance, against people who don't want to see the ugliness of the world and don't want to get involved and don't want to get their hands dirty, want to be clean and sealed off and hermetic. We fight against that. We always have and always will. One last story. It's a story by the Yiddish writer Yitzchak Leib Peretz, but it's really a Hasidic story in the best tradition. It's called Im Lo Lamala, If Not Higher. Peretz says, once there was a litvak. If you don't know what a litvak is, let me explain, since actually, Wolpe is a litvak name. A litvak is someone from Lithuania, but really what a litvak means is a rationalist, somebody who's not mystical, who's not romantic, who's not spiritual, is a rationalist, a thinker, an intellectual, argumentative, a litvak. So there was a litvak who was doing business and his carriage broke down near a Hasidic town and he had nowhere to go and it was almost Shabbat and he had to observe Shabbat. So he went into the Hasidic synagogue and there this Hasid comes up to him and says, and remember litvaks, they don't like Hasidim very much because Hasidim are all dancing and singing and all this stuff that litvaks don't do. Hasid comes up to him and says, you see our rabbi? Each year, right before Kol Nidre, right before Yom Kippur, our rabbi goes up to heaven. And the litvak thinks, right, sure he does. And then the second chassid comes up and tells him the same thing. This happens again and again and again and again. He's so annoyed that he thinks to himself, I'm going to follow him. And so when Kol Nidre comes around, he goes near the rabbi's house and he follows him. And he looks through the window as the rabbi puts on a lumberjack outfit and goes out into the woods and he starts to chop wood. And once he's chopped down a sufficient number of trees, he's got this huge load of wood, and he carries it to an isolated cottage in the woods, and he knocks on the door, and an old woman answers, and he says, I brought you your wood for the winter. And she says, go away, I can't pay you. And he said, when the spring comes, it thaws and it's warm, then you'll pay me, but for now, just take your wood. So she opens it up, and he builds a fire, and he leaves the pile of wood, and he shuts the door, and then he runs back to his house, and he changes into his clothes for Yom Kippur, and he shows up at the synagogue. And the litvak followed him the whole time, and he's standing there in the synagogue. And a chassid comes up to him and says, you know, right before Yom Kippur, our rabbi goes up to heaven. And the litvak says, if not higher. That's what it means. It means that if you want the ascension, the elevation, the real distance, You have to have the real closeness. It means that when in a minute we sing and you put whatever amount to help the synagogue that you put, at the same time, I want you to find someone around you that you don't know and tell them who you are and find out who they are. In other words, closeness. You don't have to know everyone. Just do it, bird by bird, face by face, soul by soul. Together, let's build a world where nobody has to feel far away. Shana Tova.